Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
From the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 7, and first we read text 55, which has no purport. Sayastana stana vata kridasanan dikam mithuni buya vishradau cheratur vana rajisu. The translation is, naively trusting in the future, they carried out their acts of resting, sitting, walking, standing, conversing, playing, eating, and so forth, as a loving couple amongst the trees of the forest. So they're the two little pigeons, having a very nice time in the material world. Text 56.
Yam yam vachati sarajan. Tapayanti anukampita tantam samanayat kamam krichrenapi ajitendriya yam yam vanchati sarajam Tapayanti anukampita tantam samanayat kamam krichrenapi ajitendriya yam yam
whatever
vanchati
would want
she
sorry.
Sa.
She.
Rajan.
O king.
O king.
Tapayanti.
Pleasing.
Pleasing.
Anukampita.
Anukampita.
Being shown mercy.
Tam
tam.
That.
Samanayat.
Samanayat.
Brought.
Kamam.
Kamam.
Her desire.
Krishrena,
with difficulty.
Api,
even.
Ajitendriya,
having never learned to control his senses. So, translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. So, the first translation, as you remember, was naively trusting in the future. They carried out their acts of resting, sitting, walking, standing, conversing, playing, eating, and so forth, as a loving couple amongst the trees of the forest. Whenever she desired anything, O king, the she pigeon would flatteringly cajole her husband, and he in turn would gratify her by faithfully doing whatever she wanted, even with great personal difficulty. Thus, he could not control his senses in her association. Before, the word tapayanti indicates that the lady pigeon was quite expert in seducing her husband through smiling glances and loving talks. Thus appealing to his noble sentiments, she efficiently engaged him as her faithful servant. The poor pigeon was ajitendriya, or one who cannot control his senses and whose heart is easily melted by the beauty of a woman. The Brahmana Avadhut is giving valuable instruction by narrating the story of the two pigeons and the terrible distress they suffered by inevitable separation. If one's intelligence is not dedicated to serving Rishikesh, the Supreme Lord of sense activity, undoubtedly one will plunge into the nescience of bodily gratification. Then one becomes no better than the foolish pigeon. Omagana timiranda shyaganandjana salakaya chakshura militamena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Nama om vishnubhadaya krishna bastaya bhutale srimati ridayananda goswami niti namine. Nama om vishnubhadaya krishna bastaya bhutale srimati bhaktivedanta swami niti namine. Namaste sarasvati devam gauravani pacharine nevisesa shunyavari pashacharde shatarine. Shri Krishna Jaitana Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is a really interesting little section of the Bhagavatam. Great for grihasthas. Never become too attached. The story of the pigeons. How often do we use pigeons in our analogy when we're preaching to people? If a person is very lusty, we always say, listen, you better watch out, you'll end up a pigeon. So here we have two pigeons, and they make the mistake, the big mistake in this temporary material world, the identity that this world is going to go on forever and ever, naively trusting the future. Now in Australia, there's an Australian terminology which is synonymous with the Australian character. And that's that sloka that is uttered by every good Australian male and female, is, she'll be right, mate. She'll be apples. She'll be okay. So whatever the future holds, don't worry, she'll be right. Unfortunately, that is a naive attitude in trusting the future. Trust no future, however great. So this is a classic picture that we're fed throughout our lives of a loving couple, of a loving couple relating to one another. We see them sitting together, resting together, walking and standing, conversing and playing with one another, eating and so forth. And the typical thing, a loving couple amongst the trees of the forest. So here you have it in classic literature, in films, the lovely couple walking off in the sunset, walking through the bush. But unfortunately, it doesn't happen, have a happy ending. Sometimes they depict the unhappiness of a relationship like that, like in Romeo and Juliet. But generally, we have this idea that when I find somebody that I will love, I will give my all to, we will live happily ever after, and have not a care in the world. So this is this first part. The second translation, the second verse, is the male pigeon is becoming completely illusioned by the female pigeon. He's overwhelmed by her. And she's really playing this up. Anything she desires, she knows how to cajole and flatter him. And we see this so often in the material world. A woman just has to bat her eyelids to her husband or to anybody in this day and age. And the male will quickly, yes, what would you like? Yes. But it also happens the other way as well. This is a one-sided sort of understanding. But it also applies to females, because males also have their ways of attracting the female, and that the female will do everything that they want for them. So, ultimately, as it's pointed out here, this is a loss of intelligence. Because if one's intelligence is not dedicated to serving the Supreme, Rishikesh, the Supreme Lord of sense activities, undoubtedly one will plunge into the nescience of bodily gratification. And then one becomes no better than a foolish pigeon. So there are a lot of pigeons in this material world. A lot of pigeons that are jitendriya, they are illusions, and they melt at the sight of a beautiful woman. So not that there's anything wrong with beauty. We can understand that everything beautiful comes but from a spark of Krishna's splendour. So a woman can be beautiful and a man can be beautiful, and we can appreciate that. It's not like we say, oh God, no, no. You can appreciate it, but you have to understand, where does that beauty actually come from? And that beauty comes from Krishna. And Krishna residing within the heart. Because real beauty, when you meet somebody that's very, very beautiful, they're actually very much in tune with the mode of goodness, and they look very beautiful because of that mode of goodness. So there's a couple of facts about pigeons. We often say, if you are very lusty, then why don't you take the body of a pigeon? Some people say, yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea. Actually, pigeons, and we have a number of pigeons floating around here, pigeons are in fact one of the most intelligent animals on the planet. There are only six animals, and they're probably one of the most intelligent birds on the planet. You wouldn't pick it, would you, when you actually see them out there? But they can actually recognise their reflection. So a pigeon You know how you have other birds and they see their reflection in the mirror and they start pecking at it, thinking that it's an opposition. A pigeon actually recognises that's me in that mirror. Another thing that a pigeon can do is by incentives of giving food, they can remember 26 letters of the alphabet. They can recognise 26 letters of the alphabet. And they can also differentiate between different photos. So if there's a photo of a human face and their master is one face and somebody else, they can actually recognise on a photograph who their owner is. So they're not as dumb as they look. They also have an incredible mechanism in their body that they can enjoy incredible sex life. They can copulate hundreds of times in a day. They reproduce themselves 8 times a year. So they can create babies 8 times a year. So they're an incredible instrument, incredible body that this pigeon has got. But, as we pointed out here, no matter how incredible the body is, by naively trusting the future, as this analogy is being made aware, you're just lost. There is no future. So often in our preaching, we have people that have this pigeon mentality, this blocked vision of the future. You know, you may have an opportunity to preach to somebody and you say, well, look, you know, the nature of human existence is to try to achieve as much happiness as we can. And true happiness is actually surrendering to the Lord who has created everything. And you have to understand, my dear sir or my dear lady, that this is a temporary situation that you're in. And so often when we're preaching at Gopal's or at different other venues, you have a couple and they say, yes, but I'm so happy with my wife, you know, nothing can beat that. And you say, well, yes, maybe you are happy at the moment, but eventually death will take your partner away. And what then? But they don't want to even think about that or contemplate that. They want to just stay in that situation where they're in constant love. They're eating together, sleeping, and so on and so forth, and playing. So this is not a use of proper intelligence. The proper intelligence is to understand that Rishikesh, the Supreme Lord Krishna, is the one that is actually that we have to serve and dedicate our lives to. So we have to control our senses, and the way that that is done, as mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, is 3:27. There are two little verses in Bhagavad Gita. 3:27 says, Prakriti kriyamanani gune kamani savashaha hankara vibhuratma kartahamiti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself to be the doer of activities which are in actuality carried out by nature. So two persons, this is Prabhupada's purport, two persons, one in Krishna consciousness, the one and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level, may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in respective positions. So you may have, even in this point here where it's mentioning the attachment between male and female, you may have a couple in Krishna consciousness and a couple in material consciousness, and for all intent and purposes, it looks like that they're the same, doing the same activities. A married couple could be sitting together, playing together, resting together. It's not that a married couple in Krishna consciousness don't do those things. So, as is pointed out, it may appear, in material consciousness, working on the same level may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything. He does not know that the mechanisms of the body is produced by material nature, which work under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. The materialistic person has no knowledge that ultimately he is under the control of Krishna. The person in false ego takes all the credit for doing everything independently, and that is a symptom of his nescience. He does not know that this gross body and subtle body is the creation of material nature under the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as such, his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in the service of the Lord. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Rishikesh, or the master of the senses of the material body, for due to his long misuse of senses in sense gratification, He is factually bewildered by the false ego, which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. So he's lost. He's forgetting what he really is and his relationship to Krishna. The second translation, one who is in knowledge of the Absolute, Almighty Arm, does not engage himself in senses or sense gratification, knowing well the difference between work in devotion and the work of fruitive activities. And Prabhupada purports, the knower of the Absolute is convinced of his awkward position in the material association. He knows that he is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and that his position should not be that of material creation. He knows that his real identity is part and parcel of the Supreme, who is eternal bliss and knowledge, and he realizes that somehow or other he is entrapped in this material conception of life. In his pure state of existence, he is meant to dovetail his activities in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. He therefore engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness and becomes naturally unattached to the activities of material senses, which are all circumstantial and temporary. He knows that his material condition of life is under the supreme control of the Lord. Consequently, he is not disturbed by all kinds of material reactions, which he considers to be the mercy of the Lord. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, one who knows the Absolute Truth in three different features, namely Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is called Tattvavit, for he knows also his own factual position in relationship with the Supreme. So this is the position of a devotee. A devotee can have relationships in this material world, but a devotee is known as Tattvavit. He knows the real position of one's relationship. He knows that one's partner, as is pointed out here, one's partner is not his property or her property. One's partner is actually Krishna's property. So as a couple in marriage, as I've explained often, and it's often explained, in marriage, in a Krishna conscious marriage, in a marriage that's based on self-realization, the marriage is actually a threesome. Everything revolves around Krishna. So there are 10 basic samskaras that a human usually performs through the Vedic ceremony, and one of the samskaras is called Vivhaya, the Vivhaya samskara, which is the marriage rite. Now Vivhaya means something, carrying something very special and very carefully. So when we actually have a relationship in Krishna consciousness, a married relationship, as is being described here, a relationship between a male and a female, that is a very special thing, and it's something that should be treasured and carried. So by carrying, we actually carry one another, we support one another. So this is the basis of a Krishna conscious marriage or partnership. With Krishna as the centre, we always look after and we carry and we nurture our partner. It's not that we try to exploit them. It's not that we try to cajole or get the partner to do what we want because of sense gratification. All we're really wanting in a Krishna conscious relationship is for that person to also come to a level of God consciousness and together grow in Krishna consciousness and ultimately go back home, back to Godhead. And constantly, constantly engage in service, as is mentioned here. Engaging the senses in service to Krishna. So, right to the end. Keeping it right to the end. But nowadays, we have this whole system of vanashram where at the end of life one has to go into the vanaprastha ashram. And so sometimes the devotees have this understanding that I'm coming near 50 or 60, and for some devotees that's fine. I have to leave my partner and I have to go off to the wilderness, or I have to go and preach and become sannyas. But actually that's not what's meant in the Vedic culture. If a husband and wife are supporting each other in their Krishna consciousness and they're making each other strong in their Krishna consciousness, there's no need to even separate. Prabhupada points this out. And vanaprastha is actually, in this day and age, vanaprastha means actually becoming even more dedicated to serving the spiritual master and serving Krishna in every way with all our senses. When we enter this Vivaya marriage samskara, one of the duties is that we produce offspring to again carry on in Krishna consciousness. We bring them in Krishna consciousness. We bring our children into Krishna consciousness. So when that is done and the children are of an adult age, then it's incumbent upon the husband and wife to then move to a different level of God consciousness, a different level of surrender, and start to preach. And this vanaprastha, as was mentioned here, also the word vana, the trees. I've heard it explained that what is meant in this day and age about being a vanaprastha is that one surrenders even more to Tulsi Devi. Tulsi Devi is the goddess of trees. And so by surrendering even more to Tulsi Devi means we even surrender more to devotional service. What use would it be if senior men and women within Krishna consciousness would head off to the forest when they reach 50 or 60 with all the experience they've accrued over the years to just drift off and live in the bush somewhere? It has served no purpose. So for those devotees that are inclined to take up the vanaprastha ashram, their duty is to preach more, to actually travel and preach more, to do more, because they don't have this incredible burden or responsibility to look after their children anymore. They are able to look after themselves. And so the burden is then to how can I encourage and how can I help the fallen conditioned souls and my brothers and sisters within Krishna consciousness. So nowadays, this going to the forest means being more determined to preach more and more. So it was brought to my attention by one of the devotees about how Prabhupada mentions this in relationship to the ideal couple of Prithu Maharaj and Queen Archi, who were constantly engaged in service. I mean, if you read in the fourth canto, there's an amazing pastimes of Prithu Maharaj and Queen Archi. Now, Archie was constantly engaged in service to her husband, and her husband was always following a good Krishna conscious path and looking after his wife. Prabhupada even goes to explain when the time came for Maharaj Prithu to take vanaprastha, it's mentioned in the Shastra that he went off to the forest. And there's initially in the Sanskrit, there's no mention that Archie followed him. And Prabhupada explained there's no need to mention that Archie also went to the forest because in a Krishna conscious union, the husband and the wife are actually one in purpose in serving the Lord. They are as good as one body. So this Prithu Maharaj went to the forest and Archie followed him dedicatedly. And their lives were blessed with great realization, and at the end they went back home, back to Godhead. Now there's one purport after the devotee explained how enlivening that whole section was. I went and read it, and it was pertinent to the verse today. I just wanted to read this to you. It's from the Veda base, the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the fourth canto, chapter 23, text 29. Translation is, the great sage Maitreya continued to speak, "My dear Vidura, when the wives of the denizens of heaven were thus talking amongst themselves, Queen Archie reached the planet which her husband, Maharaj Prithu, the topmost self-realized soul, had attained." This is an amazing purport. According to the Vedic scripture, a woman who dies with her husband or enters into the fire in which her husband is burning also enters the same planet as her husband attains. Now, this burning at the end of life, that's not applicable in this Kali Yuga, okay? So, ladies don't have to jump into a fire. In this material world, there is a planet known as Pitaloka, just as there is a planet known as Pitriloka. But in this verse, the word Patiloka does not refer to any planet within this material world. For Prithu Maharaj, being the topmost among self-realized souls, certainly returned home back to Godhead and attained one of the Vaikuntha planets. He was actually Sakshavesha avatar. Queen Archie also entered Pitaloka, but this planet is not in the material universe, for she actually entered the planet which her husband attained. In the material world also, when a woman dies with her husband, she again unites with him in the next birth. Similarly, Maharaj Prithu and Queen Archie united in the Vaikuntha planets. So if we are dedicating our lives to Krishna consciousness with a good Krishna conscious partner, that doesn't end at this material world. See you later, honey. No, you actually meet again in the spiritual world and serve in the Vaikuntha planets. In the Vaikuntha planets, there are husbands and there are wives, and there is no question of their giving birth to children or having sex life. In the Vaikuntha planets, both husbands and wives are extraordinarily beautiful, and they are attracted to one another. So there's nothing wrong with being attracted to one another, but again, with this understanding, Krishna is in the centre of that relationship. But they do not enjoy sex life. And this is what you find also within the Vanaprastha ashram, that sex life becomes a non-event. It's just not part of the whole thing of the body growing older, not too many yippie beans going on, and everything has sort of calmed down a bit, and you've seen the fruit of your union, you've seen your children, you think, okay, that's enough now. You know, so actually Alokanath Swami said that as you, the beauty of getting older is that the sex drive automatically just dies down a little bit. And it's actually very nice to become older, that you haven't got this raging sensual thing happening that you have to control, that it just easily settles down. So in the spiritual realm, in Vaikuntha, there is no sex life. It's just a Krishna conscious relationship. Indeed, they consider sex to be not very relishable, because both husband and wife are always absorbed in Krishna consciousness and in glorifying and chanting the glories of the Lord. So this chanting of the Lord's name is more enthusing and more over... And you find that also in the life of Krishna consciousness. This Krishna consciousness, the chanting of the name, the serving of the deity, becomes so much more nectarian than any sort of little sense gratification. So according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, a husband and wife can turn the home into a place as good as Vaikuntha. So this is right back here. So the two little pigeons, the devotee pigeons, can turn their home into a Vaikuntha planet. Even while in this material world, being absorbed in Krishna consciousness, even in this world, husband and wife can live in Vaikuntha simply by installing the deity of the Lord within the home and serving the deity according to the directions of Shastra. According to the directions of Shastra. So that doesn't mean that we don't serve here at the temple. That is also a very important part. This is the highest standard. But that Prabhupada is also pointing out, and I've noticed that a lot with different Grihastha couples, that they may have deities in their home, but they're not placed in great emphasis. Oh yeah, we just offer our boga or whatever, and the deities are over there, they've got a little cupboard, and they close the cupboard. But the deities actually should be a foremost feature in a Grihastha's home. The best room in the house, give it to the deities, because that room is Krishna's room. And that way you constantly remember, this is Krishna's room. It is a room where you meditate on Krishna, where you can read, where you can chant your rounds in the morning. It is not possible for Grihasthas to always come to the temple. And so Prabhupada is recommending here, install the deity at home and worship the deity at home as an extension of the deities of the mandir. And by serving the deities there, you're serving Radha Vallabha, you're serving Jagannath, you're serving Gauranitai. But make it very, very special and very, very reverential. And by doing that, you're actually imbibing a Vaikuntha consciousness. So your house becomes actually a place of Vaikuntha. So within the home, serving the deity according to the directions of Shastra. It may not be as rigorous and as rigid, the serving of the deity, as it is here. But according to time, place and circumstance, you can worship the deity in a very loving and easy way. In this way, they will never feel sex urge. Krishna's right there. If you make Krishna prominent, like say for example, if we come here to the temple and you've been harassed by sexual agitation, and we're all humans, we all have that. It's part of our makeup. We can't help it. We've got this body and it has urges. But when you come to the temple, guess what happens? The urges are put on hold. I can't think like that in front of the deities. Isn't it? We start to think, block it out. I have to serve the deity. So in the same way, if we make our homes very much a place of Vaikuntha, the deity is the prominent feature, Krishna is the central figure within the home, then the sex urge is minimized. And that is the test of advancement in devotional service. One who is advanced in devotional service is never attracted to sex life. That's not that he's repulsed by sex life, but he's just not, he or she is just not attracted to it. It's just a non-event. They know it exists, but it doesn't matter. As soon as one becomes detached from sex life and proportionately attached to service to the Lord, he or she actually experiences living in the Vaikuntha planets. In the ultimate issue, there is actually no material world. This is an amazing statement that Prabhupada is making here. In the ultimate issue, there is no material world. This doesn't exist. It's a phantasmagoria. It's a temporary phantasmagoria. But when one forgets the service of the Lord and engages himself in the service of his senses, he is said to be living in this material world. That's when it happens. So engaging our senses in Krishna's service, then we become liberated. So a devotee is Krishnaika Sarana. Krishnaika Sarana. Only to Krishna do we surrender. Only to Krishna do we surrender. Our lives are filled with Krishna. We are filled with love and compassion as a devotee. It's a natural consequence of being a devotee. Become filled with compassion and love. And it's a compassion for your partner. There's a loving exchange between your partner. It is not wrong for a grihastha to love their partner, to be affectionate and compassionate to their partner. It is actually needed, but with the understanding that Krishna is the center. It is not wrong for a grihastha couple to love their children, to nurture their children, to be compassionate to their children. But again, it's with Krishna as the center. It is not wrong for the devotee to love and feel compassion for mankind, for our friends and relatives around us and for the people that we meet in our daily lives. We understand that Krishna resides within the heart of every living entity, and so Krishna is there in that relationship, in any relationship that we have. Krishna is the partner in any relationship. So Krishnaika Sarana, only to Krishna, nobody else, only to Krishna, only to that blue boy, we surrender fully. Only to Krishna, only for Krishna. Everything we do is only for Krishna and only with Krishna. Because everything we do, Krishna is standing right beside us in a loving way. And that is true renunciation. That is truly controlling the senses, that everything we do is for Krishna. So, sometimes we have this analogy, they do this anagram of wife. And the material concept of wife, wife is, for a materialist, a wonderful instrument for enjoyment. W-I-F-E. A wonderful instrument for enjoyment. That's a material conception. That's the pigeon's outlook. And a husband, if you analyse in the English language, husband comes from the word house, bound. So what a wife would like to do is to control the wanderings of a man and house bound him. Let me just stay here with me and look after me. But when there's a devotee relationship, then the wife says, yes, husband, go out and preach. Go, yes, preach. Teach people. And they're never lost. Wherever they are, there's that connection. So we have a spiritual understanding as what a wife and husband means. And that means we follow strictly, slowly but surely, develop our love for Krishna and the holy name. We bring that holy name into our lives. And the holy name is so important. We have to meditate on Krishna, controlling our senses in every aspect of our life. But the holy name, the meditation of the holy name, solidifies that understanding. We're connecting with Krishna. So in every way, in a relationship, we have to meditate, meditate, meditate. Always. And how do we meditate? Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam. Always chanting the holy name. Always seeing Krishna everywhere. So if we see that in our relationships, in our service, in everything that we do, it's a constant meditation. When we see people at Gopal's, we're friendly because we understand that there's another spirit soul who's got pigeon mentality. Let me feed them some good pigeon food, some nice prasadam. Let me awaken them. Let me associate them. Let me exude some compassion and love to these fallen conditioned souls, that they become attracted more and more to Krishna consciousness. This is what attracts people. People need love. People want, are searching for real love. Not this ajitendriya, not this fleeting thing, not this cajoling thing, not this materialistic thing. They are looking for the real thing, and the real thing is Krishna. And Krishna can be found by first and foremost chanting his holy name. And that means rigorously doing what the spiritual master has asked you to do, is chanting 16 rounds diligently. What Krishna has asked, what Lord Chaitanya has asked, what the Parampara is asking you to do. It's not such a hard thing. Just meditate on Krishna for 16 rounds. Just really focus. Don't let anything else come in. And support your partner, support your friends in doing this process of meditation. Encourage them. Help them along. You know? And then when you have that meditation under your belt, first thing in the morning, that you've saturated yourself with Krishna consciousness, that you feel Krishna's energy, then go out and do your service, do your duty with Krishna in mind. And it becomes very, very fulfilling. So there's one thing, generally I like to finish up with a little prayer for, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written, and I'd like to do the same again today. It's pertinent to this verse, and it's a prayer by that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote in 1896. While located in this mayic world, man must live peacefully with the object of cultivating the spirit. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions man here, it's also man and woman. In his society he must lead a pure life, avoid of sin, and do as much good as he can to his brother man. He must be himself humble, bearing difficulties of life with heroism. Understanding where the troubles are coming from, this is with heroism. Must not brag of any goodness or grandeur he has, and must treat everyone with respect due to him. Marriage with a view to peaceful and virtuous life and with a view for procreating servants of the Lord is a good institution for a Vaishnava. Spiritual cultivation is the main object of life. Do everything that helps it and abstain from doing anything which thwarts the cultivation of the spirit. Have a strong faith that Krishna alone protects you and none else. Admit him as your only guardian. Do everything which you know Krishna wishes you to do and never think that you do a thing independent of the holy wish of Krishna. Do all that you do with humility. Always remember that you are a sojourner in this world and you must be prepared for your own home, do your duties, cultivate bhakti as a means of obtaining the great end of life. Krishna Priti, employ your body, mind and spirit in the service of the deity in all your actions. Worship the great Lord. Do these with your heart, mind and strength in the company of spiritual people alone. And you will see Krishna in no time. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's guarantee. You will see Krishna in no time. And you will. Krishna will reveal himself to you in so many different ways in your preaching and in your connection with so many other people. So I'll stop here. Are there any comments or questions at all? Yes, Prabhu.
Referring to the verse of the next chapter speaks about Kundalini and Prabhupada and the topic will speak much about how you become entangled in this material world. What the main thing is this attraction between man and woman. Mm. So in my view of practice level, how do I get to understand? Because most times we just see that the one kind of pointedness.
Prabhupada was asked that question also, you know. And Prabhupada said, especially when you're in a younger body, it's difficult. He said, he'd made no bones about it. It's not an easy thing. Many, many devotees have fallen down. But Prabhupada, when he was asked that question, and there's actually a photo of him, he gritted his teeth like that. And he said, you grit your teeth and you bear it. So this desire is there always, but you have to just grit your teeth and bear it and push on. But the fundamental thing that knows over the years of being a devotee, the fundamental thing that has helped me personally is to have, as best as you can, a good morning program. Really fixing your mind, and that doesn't mean necessarily a morning program here at the temple. You've got the opportunity to have this here. But having a program, meaning you're chanting your rounds as diligently and as best as you can, without interruption, really focusing on Krishna's holy name and really meditating on Krishna and feeling Krishna coming into your life. If you're meditating correctly, you will feel Krishna entering your life. Literally. You will feel him in different ways, in relationship to other devotees. You'll see Krishna at time with realizations. You know, you'll actually experience, here's my loving Lord. And it's not that Krishna is just something that we've read in the Shastras. You actually come to understand this personal relationship that you have with Krishna. And when you have that, and he becomes part of all those different relationships, then you can actually truly control the senses. But in the meantime, when you're developing that Krishna consciousness, yeah, just in a sense, you just have to grit your teeth and bear it. It's nothing that we can do about it. We're stuck. We decided to come to this material world and we wanted sense enjoyment. So Krishna says, here, I'll give you the perfect sense enjoyment machine. You know, well, maybe not. The pigeon has got a pretty good machine as well. But, you know, here we've got this human body. But in this human form of life, you can actually get out of that material entrapment and make your way back home, back to Godhead, and live a very peaceful Krishna conscious existence with Krishna as the centre. It's not easy. Nobody said it was going to be easy, but when you actually make the effort, it becomes easier and it becomes more real, and you experience it. Some people experience it very quickly, others it takes a little time, but you will experience Krishna coming to you. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says here, you know, you will see Krishna in no time. And there's so many times that in the Shastras, Prabhupada has said in the purports, it's only a matter of time where all of a sudden Krishna will be manifest to you. And the spiritual master will say, Swarup, this is Krishna, Krishna, this is Swarup. And you'll embrace. And Krishna will be with you forever. And you'll never lose that connection again. So that's the same with all of us. Krishna makes that promise, you know, that he loves each and every one of us. And there's no ifs or buts. We just have to direct our senses, control our senses, dedicate our lives and serve in a very submissive way, and Krishna will manifest himself. It will happen, and then it becomes easier. Does that make sense? Any other comments or questions for us? So it's an interesting section of the Bhagavatam. It's something that we all have to deal with. And it's probably one of the foremost things that in Krishna consciousness. You know, people often say, gee, Krishna consciousness would be really good if we just had three regulative principles. But there are four regulative principles, and we have to see why there are four regulative principles, because we want to dedicate our whole life. Because there are other religions. In other religions, you know, it's quite okay to have sensual gratification. You know, but in devotional service, we taper that and we get more, we are filled up more with love for Krishna, and then this urge for sense gratification becomes less and less. So we've been selected, we've been given the opportunity, we deserve the opportunity of Krishna consciousness. We just have to take to it. And the most important part is to dedicatedly meditate on the holy name of the Lord and then meditate on Krishna the whole day. Don't let your senses wander. Don't let your senses drift off. See your whole day as a meditation on the Supreme Lord in every different facet, whether it be working at home, working in an office, being with friends, teaching, in so many different, playing, resting, eating, standing, walking, sitting, resting, so many different things. See it all in relationship to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Mm-hmm.